You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
And happy Monday to you. We appreciate you being here. Matt Jones in studio with Ethan Westerman at our downtown Fayetteville office. It's a little bit of a different week for us because fall camp is over. Even though the Razorbacks don't start football season for 10 more days against UAPB in Little Rock, the camp portion is over, Ethan. They had their final major scrimmage last Thursday at Razorback Stadium. What's the plan for this week? Do they scrimmage anymore before the next game?
No, this week it's just a bunch of closed practices. So what that means is, you know, reporters, we have been able to go up till this point to maybe 20, 25 minutes max of these practices to watch. Really nice because you can see who's participating and not. That's the main advantage. You can kind of see who's running with what teams. But from here on out, we're just going to have press conferences. So
it feels like this is a little bit different maybe than the schedule they've taken in the past. I feel like most preseasons you have three scrimmages before the first game. It could be changed a little bit, I don't know, because of the fact they're starting on a Thursday this year. Now, they started camp 2 days earlier to compensate for that, but I don't know. Maybe it's the fact they look at UAPB like a scrimmage.
They've scrimmaged on Thursdays up to this point. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you know, I think it's just a mark of, hey, we're X weeks away. And the last scrimmage was marked 2 weeks away, and I don't think you scrimmage 1 week before your first game, especially with what all's going on right now with just trying to get some slightly dinged up players back. I think that it's at this point just it feels like we're almost, because it's such a weird start day doing it on a Thursday, it almost feels like this is the start of game week, but it's not. It's just with kind of how things are being treated. We will have Bobby Petrino actually again tomorrow, at least we're scheduled to, for a news conference, and then Travis Williams on Wednesday. So we have some, we're going to be able to hear from the coordinators before leading up to the first game, but we won't be able to go and watch them ourselves.
Which, that's different from past years. Typically, the coordinators have only been available one time during the preseason. This year, available two times. You know, one more thought on the scrimmages or the lack thereof is the fact that Sam Pittman said last week that they have not scaled back at all. They've really kept the throttle down. You know, trying to push these players and see maybe just how much they can tolerate. Maybe the scrimmages have been a little bit more, maybe not physical is the right word, but maybe just the duration of the preseason camp has been more of a physical toll on them than past years.
Yeah, and I was actually talking to a former player who played here just about, you know, what is the, at this point of fall camp, like, what's the concern level that there's, like, I think at one point we had 15 guys simultaneously, you know, missing some time or limited. And he reaffirmed me. He was just like, you know, he said, fall camp takes a real toll on your body. He said, it's a lot of wear and tear. Mm-hmm. And it sounded to me like this is maybe in the past there's been like this much stuff going on and we don't necessarily see players taking, like, maybe they just tough it out and don't really talk about it and they just keep going. But I think that this year there's just a real proactive approach just with how physical they've been doing everything. I mean, if you're going to go really physical in your scrimmages, in the spring they live tackled a lot. You know, it has that wear and tear effect that maybe at this point, you know, you're just trying to make sure that you have your top guys ready for that first game.
Personnel-wise, we know Jaquindon Jackson missed a practice this weekend. Mm-hmm. Kudus is still out on the offensive line. Tykeese Crawford, is still out on the offensive line.
Yeah.
What are some other notable, as far as players maybe either being out or coming back?
Yeah, Tykeese Crawford, you know, to this point, there'd only really been these little minor injuries happening, I think, just in regular practices. They were coming out of these scrimmages pretty unscathed, but it sounded like he tweaked something a tiny bit. But Sam Pittman didn't seem worried about that timeline after the scrimmage. Jaquindon Jackson, there were so many injuries. I hope I'm not getting them jumbled up, but I'm almost positive his was an ankle sprain that he was dealing with there for a little bit. And I don't know. There's
like Crawford is his shoulder.
Crawford's his shoulder, yeah. Okay. And but Jackson's is an ankle sprain, and he, I don't know if y'all, there's a video that the team posted after their scrimmage, and he trucked somebody in practice. Like, it didn't look like he was that very slowed down for their scrimmage. But he was at practice on Saturday. He was just walking around, kind of trying to stay engaged and stuff. I wouldn't be too worried about what's going on there. The real one in my head is, when will Kudus be back? I think we talked about this last time I was actually in here. Sam said last week, so this was Thursday, that could get him back as early as today, Monday, mm-hmm. or the next Monday. And I think we kind of agreed last time, like, if it's this Monday, I think we'll see him for UAPB. If it's the next Monday, I'm not so sure that Patrick Kudus would be in the starting lineup for that game. But with him, I mean, he's for sure like somebody they want starting. So it's caused all this shuffle.
And we talked too about the timing on the offensive line. He's been out since the second day of practice.
Yep.
Even if he came back this week, I'm not sure that the timing would be, maybe it is, but I mean, it would be a question that I have, is the timing good enough to even be able to play in 10 days when he hasn't, you know, I mean, we're talking practice began July 31st.
Yep.
So he hasn't practiced since August 1st.
Yeah, he was,
we're going on 3 weeks now that he hasn't been out there.
Yeah, and that's, I don't care what sport you're playing. If you miss that much time on the field, like with your teammates, I mean, it just, there's a ramp up period. I think I said this last time, like you mm-hmm. have to, there's a little period that has to happen where you get back to just feeling comfortable. And a lot of times, you know, I don't know really, I've never had like a serious back injury, but Patrick Kudus is dealing with is a back. And there is that little period with most injuries where you're having to kind of trust it again. Like, mm-hmm. like, does it actually feel fine enough for me to practice? Am I going to tweak it worse? So, yeah, and I believe the word that Sam Pittman used, or the phrase that he used when he talked to us on Thursday, was that they're trying to, I'm blanking on the term, but basically they're trying to be super precautious, that they're like thinking long term.
They don't want it to flare up again later. They don't want to bring him back too early.
Yeah.
And then cause a problem that might keep him out for longer. It's basically what they want to do is they want to keep him out right now, make sure the back heals up the way it's supposed to, and if he can't play the first game or the first two games or however many games, that's fine, but you would rather him not play those games as opposed to coming back too early and then maybe getting hurt the sixth game and not being able to play again.
Yeah, what Sam said is they don't want to get him out there too fast because they don't want to complicate the injury mm-hmm. for the rest of the year. And they said they're being very, very cautious with him. And like I just said a minute ago, he's one of the guys that Sam Pittman really likes. And he is at health. If he's healthy, this guy is for sure a starter. And I don't think that whenever you get to the meat of your schedule, whenever you're back-to-back weeks playing, you know, Auburn, A&M, et cetera, you want your top guys out. And I think that you don't rush a guy like Patrick Kudus for the UAPB game.
Don't I feel a little sleepy around here? I mean, trying to get ready for the Arkansas Pine Bluff game. I know the players, they want to get out there and they want to play. And playing Pine Bluff is going to give, or it should give, a lot of players a chance to get, you know, game experience in that game. But there's just something about I go back 2 years ago to when they played Cincinnati in their first game.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a stark difference preparing for a team that has some name appeal as opposed to preparing for a Western Carolina, preparing for a UAPB. We just found out this morning they're going to start with another FCS team next season, Alabama A&M, and we'll talk about why that is a little bit later. But I don't know. There just doesn't seem – it's like everybody, hey, we know UAPB is coming up. You're going to watch that game.
Mm-hmm.
But Oklahoma State's the real game we're interested
and
in. And I would think it has to be hard for the players not to, you know, not that they should be able to show up and beat UAPB, but I think that maybe it gets a little hard for them, the fact that everybody else is looking ahead to week two. It reminds me a little bit of Pittman's second season here when they opened with Rice and they played Texas in week two. And I remember him going to somewhere, maybe the Touchdown Club, maybe Media Days, and he said, hey guys, we start with old Southwest Conference team, and it's not the one everybody's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And it does feel a little sleepy. I think it reminds me a lot of, it's almost the exact same as 2017. They opened in Little Rock on a Thursday against Florida A&M.
I was there.
And then they bounced back the next week and had a big game in Fayetteville on CBS against TCU and another Big 12 team. And that was a letdown the week two. They actually looked all right there on the Thursday night game, as expected. But I think that whenever you have a game like this right off the bat, especially if it's not even on a Saturday, it's just a little bit of like it almost feels categorized as this isn't a real normal game. It's almost like this is just a tune-up.
Well, it's hard to get up. It's hard to get up for the FCS games, period.
Yeah.
SEC teams should not be playing FCS teams. And I understand why they do it. And I'm sure, you know, the administrators would and the coaches would say, oh, yeah, we need that game. We need that game for, you know, purposes of getting your players somewhat healthy, getting players experienced. You need that win to get toward bowl eligibility in a lot of cases. My gosh, when you get an SEC team on the field with an FCS team, it just does not – how is that enjoyable to watch for the public? And as, you know, as we get into this era, not that we're not already there, but you know, we're going to continue to get into the television is going to continue to play a bigger role in this. And at what point do the TV networks say, hey, guys, we want a competitive game. We don't want to go put Arkansas UAPB over on ESPN Plus. You know, we want to see you playing teams that are going to make it competitive.
I will say that 2022 Missouri State would like a word. Your North Dakota States. I think there's
North Dakota State opens this season with Colorado, right?
Yeah, and that'll be. I think people have that as one of the games circled.
South Dakota State plays at Oklahoma State. They're a two-time reigning national champion.
I think there's
champion.
Some FCS teams that
those
like,
are games that
have some intrigue. It's whenever you're playing against a UAPB team that I think struggled last year majorly. Yeah.
There is a misconception that all FCS teams are created equal, and they are not. Yeah. There is a huge gap between, say, the Missouri Valley Conference, where you've got the Dakota schools, and say the SWAC, which Arkansas ends up playing, you know, the SWAC teams, it seems like fairly often. They played Alcorn State. They played UAPB a couple of times. Mentioned Alabama A&M a second ago. There's a huge difference between those types of FCS games. If South Dakota State came here, I'd be very interested in that game.
Yeah.
I bet the people over in Stillwater are real interested to see how that goes, especially with the fact that Oklahoma State struggled last year against South Alabama. Colorado, North Dakota State, that is an excellent matchup early in the season. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Colorado has got their hands full in that game. You know, playing the other teams, it just doesn't do much.
I actually think that there is this thing. You know, we talked about this last year. It's a glorious thing come, I think it's early December, the FCS playoffs, and you're just watching the Dakotas and the Idahos and the Montanas all duke it out to see who can be the champion. It's some sicko stuff, and it's awesome. But I love like those teams have – I feel like they've gained the respect over time. Like, I don't think in Oklahoma State, like kind of how we said it feels a little sleepy here, I would almost bet like the mood over there is kind of like, oh my goodness, this is a really good FCS team.
A little bit of a nervousness.
Yeah, like a we can't get caught slipping here. I don't think that anybody on the Arkansas side feels that way right now. Like, oh, can't get caught slipping against UAPB, which that might be a problem. I mean, as far as if you're going to show up, last year Arkansas started with an FCS team in Little Rock, and there were some glaring issues with like the inability to run the football. You had your star running back who got hurt in the middle of the like first quarter or something. There were some serious things that you're like, okay, with this first game, I know that everybody, like, we kind of viewed it as just the dress rehearsal, but it shed some light onto some real problems. And, you know, Arkansas this year playing UAPB in Little Rock might be one of those things where you look at the score with a grain of salt and you see what your eyes told you of what are maybe some potential areas whenever they go up against an Oklahoma State. If you aren't running the ball well against a UAPB, going to be hard to run it against Auburn in a few weeks.
I want to tell you, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. We think it's the most in-depth source for all of the Razorback sports analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport, unique stories on all the teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. For different publications, Ethan, me for a football newspaper tab that we're putting together for the coming week. That'll be in the Northwest Arkansas Democrat and Gazette. You for the next Hogs Illustrated, or maybe a couple down the line. We've both written some stuff about Talen Green this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's been kind of, I don't know, it's been insightful, I guess, mm-hmm. looking into what he's done. It's clear that he's, you know, the best quarterback on campus. I just wonder, though, as you've written on him in the last week or so, anything about his past that stands out? I know you talked to some of his old coaches.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing that I think people need to remember with Talen Green is this guy has crazy potential. I mean, he was a freshman All-American at Boise State. He's built like a – I wrote this in my story a little bit, kind of hinted at that he's got the height of a Ryan Mallett, and he's not nearly as fast as Lamar Jackson, but he's pretty shifty. He's got some mm-hmm. long strides. Like, he's that dual-threat quarterback that could – like, he's got all this potential in the world, so physically gifted. And he showed it his freshman year, but his sophomore year, I think we just can't forget that he struggled that. Like, he struggled just last year. He was battling cramps early in the season, and that kind of limited him on the field. They were just having to miss some time. But then whenever he really kind of got back and – they expected him to just take off right where he left off his freshman year. They really struggled. And he lost his job in week 10 or 11. It was their 10th game of the year. And I think that really for a player like him, it's one of those things where Bobby Petrino has a really good eye for just seeing what he thinks he can evolve something into, in my opinion. And I think mm-hmm. that he sees Talen Green's potential, and he's like, if I get this guy in my system, with my plays and my coaching, because Bobby just keeps on over and over. You hear him talk about Talen, he says that we've just been working on him getting over the top. He wants him to use that 6'6 to his advantage. Maybe something that he saw he didn't do necessarily at Boise State. He said that that's Talen Green's advantage. He's 6'6 and he can move. So it seems like they've been working really hard this summer and in the spring of just getting Talen Green to his throwing mechanics to just really come over the top. That Bobby said if he can just get over the top, he said he can hit anybody he could get it to anybody because he's got the height. So I'm gonna be curious to see how much the Petrino effect has come into play with Talen Green, because last year did not go how he necessarily expected. I think that even before he had his Mountain West conference championship game where he was most valuable player, I think he was probably already pretty set on hitting the portal just because of the way that the season had been going to that point. But I just think that with a guy like Talen Green, you got to remember that I think right now, for some reason, there's like some narrative that he's the next coming of, I don't know, name a great quarter. It's like he's had some struggles. It's probably going to be some growing pains in there.
I think a lot of times you look at stats from somewhere in the past, and you get real caught on that and say that's just who he is,
mm-hmm.
and you don't necessarily lend credence to the fact that players get better with new types of coaching. And I got some examples of that we can touch on in a minute. Ethan will be back a little bit later in the show, but first we're going to talk to Mitchell Westbury. He runs Maven Predictions, which is a very interesting site. We'll talk to Mitchell after this word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back. We appreciate you being with us. We'll talk to Mitchell Westbury of Maven Predictions here in just a moment. I want to tell you first, though, that Sam Pittman is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That's on Wednesday, this Wednesday, August 21st at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com. That's OzarksTix.com. Sam Pittman at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club this week. If you haven't been, it's a great time. What will happen is you'll come in, you'll get some lunch, we'll recognize some local high school players and teams. Coach Pittman will get on the stage, he'll talk for a couple of minutes, and then he and I will step over to the side and we'll have a Q&A. Always an interesting time talking to the Razorbacks football coach right before the season. So Sam Pittman on Wednesday at noon, OzarksTicks.com. Mitchell Westbury is with Maven Predictions. This is a site that I found a couple, 3 weeks back, and I found, Mitchell, your stuff to be very intriguing. And I wanted to kind of talk to you a little bit today about your methodologies, how you come up with your numbers and things of that nature. You're a former college baseball coach, so how'd you get into predicting college football games?
It was just a hobby that my brothers and I were doing. We're all three of us are very competitive people. We all play college sports, and we compete to predict the most games most accurately. So I created a model to try to predict that. I've been doing it for about 5 years, where I've constantly been tweaking the model. Mm-hmm. I wanted to add, like, I'm adding pieces as we go, starting off with home and away, but it's constantly gotten better throughout the years, and I've finally gotten confident enough to post my predictions online. This past season, we had about a 91% prediction rate and about a 71% against the spread prediction rate. So
explain to me how you come up with your numbers. So, like, for instance, you've got a score for Arkansas UAPB next week in Little Rock, and I saw on your site you've got it. Arkansas is about a 99-point-something% chance to win the game, which some people might think is kind of low. But how do you come up with these scores? What's your methodology?
So what we do for the preseason model, what I do, I use the baseline is how the teams performed the previous season. Mm-hmm. And then we tweak it from there based off expected production for each player. For instance, with Arkansas specifically, Talon Green, let's just take Talon Green versus KJ Jefferson. On paper, it's going to be a little step back. KJ Jefferson's going into his sixth year. Talon Green's going into either his third or fourth year. There's the baseline, and then each player has a contributory value that they add of expected production. Mm-hmm.
So for Arkansas, who are the players that add the most value?
You guys struggled with injuries at running back last year. Obviously, Rocket Sanders is a tremendous talent, but just if Jaquindon Jackson can get in and stay healthy, he's rushed for 5.5 yards per carry over his college career. And I really like a lot of guys on defense. Xavier Sorey is going to be a big pickup for you guys. Landon Jackson is going to be a really good player. Honestly, your whole defense, you brought back a lot of guys. One big thing with Arkansas is the wide receiver depth that you guys have. That's mm-hmm. another big piece. I think that's probably your strongest suit on offense.
Hey, you've got Arkansas at 4-8, 1-7 in the SEC. It looks like you think they're going to beat Mississippi State. One thing that was kind of interesting to me in looking through this is that they don't have a real good chance to beat some of these other ranked teams, though, that come to Fayetteville. They play Texas at home. They play Ole Miss at home. LSU at home. They play Tennessee at home. A couple of them are coming off a bye week. You know, they get Texas after a bye week. They get LSU, I think it is, after a bye week in October. The scores are somewhat close, you know, typically 6 to 9 points, somewhere in that range. But the thought that they're going to win the game, I guess maybe the confidence that you have they're going to win the game is typically like in the 20 percentile. Kind of explain that for us.
Specifically with those conference games, honestly, right now with you guys, it kind of just comes down to a talent disparity. And it's not that Arkansas doesn't have a ton of talent. Some of those teams, they're just deeper teams. Depth is a big part of my formulation. Mm-hmm. And as the season goes along, these guys take a lot of wear and tear. So, like, if you look at Ole Miss, they're three deep in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. And Texas, they've lost some key running backs, but they should be able to keep ticking on. But that's really the biggest difference with these top rank with any top elite team in college football is it comes down to depth. Mm-hmm.
You have Arkansas at 50th in your power ratings. You say they would beat 84 of, I think, the other 133 Power 5 teams, 134 Power 5 teams. Or not Power 5 teams, but teams in the FBS, 84 of 134. I mean, that would put Arkansas somewhere down near the bottom, just in terms of teams from the Power Five, I would suspect.
It's probably, let's see, I'm trying to remember how many Power Five teams there are. There's roughly 70. Right. So, yeah, it's the bottom third, but that's about right. Once again, depth plays a big role, and I just don't know if you guys have that quite yet.
I mean, that's one of the big questions here is, you know, I think a lot of people would say that if you put Arkansas's first 22 on the field against the first 22 at a lot of other SEC teams, maybe not the ones at the very top, but a lot of them, they could probably give them a pretty good game. It's what happens when the linebacker gets hurt, what happens when the cornerback gets hurt or someone, an offensive lineman. That's where it feels like the big difference is with Arkansas right now and the other teams in the SEC. Mitchell, we'll get you out of here on this. You've got we mentioned this earlier, September 7th against Oklahoma State is a game that a lot of people are interested in here at Arkansas. UAPB is a season opener. They play Oklahoma State the next week in Stillwater. You've got that score at 29-28, Oklahoma State. What's the difference? What makes that one-point difference?
Yeah, so honestly, I think a lot of that has to do with the style of play that Oklahoma State plays. I think you guys are in a good position to shut down Ollie Gordon, assuming that he plays. And Bowman turns the ball over a lot, which is something that Taylen Green's also going to have to really make sure he protects the football. That's one thing about Sam Pittman football is you guys do a really good job of playing fundamental football. You guys ran, if you take out the Missouri and Auburn game late in the season, you guys were right in pretty much every game you played last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys took care of business in the games that you're supposed to win. So I think with the way that Oklahoma State's built, you guys are built the right way to contend with them.
Mm-hmm.
You protect the football. You usually win the penalty battle. You guys do the little things that it takes, and you're going to be able to keep a lot of pressure on Bowman and force them to go to Ollie, become one-dimensional.
It'll be interesting to see how that works out. A lot of people focus on Arkansas and Oklahoma State. I think not only here, but over in Stillwater, too, is kind of an early season gauge of what these two teams might be like. Mitchell Westbury of Maven Predictions. You can find their work at mavenpredictions.com. Mitchell, we appreciate you joining us today.
I appreciate you having me.
Okay, thank you. When we come back, Ethan Westerman will join me, but first a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Back with Ethan Westerman. Want to tell you that our podcast is brought to you in part by Bentonville Glass. Bentonville Glass is committed, professional, and versatile, serving its community since 1971. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can go by and find them in Bentonville right now at 507 South Main or online at bentonvilleglass.com. So we mentioned, teased this a little bit earlier in the show, something that I wrote about this morning at our website, wholehogsports.com, is that the 2025 football schedule has changed. Not a huge change, but it is a change nonetheless. Instead of opening the season with Missouri State in 25, the Razorbacks are now going to start with Alabama A&M. Alabama A&M is a SWAC team, same conference as UAPB, who they'll open the season up against this year. Based on what I can tell, and this is based on just some wording in the game termination contract between Arkansas and Missouri State, it appears Missouri State's the one who broke this contract. Missouri State's going to pay Arkansas an undisclosed amount of money. That number is redacted in the contract, but they're going to pay Arkansas money to break that, and then Arkansas had to go find another opponent. Of course, Arkansas's done that now with Alabama A&M. A few months ago, I guess, Missouri State announced it was joining the Conference USA.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time when they did that, it was notable to me because, you know, Missouri State has been FCS for all of these years, well, when they go to Conference USA, they're going to be an FBS team now. And I wrote about that at the time saying, hey, as of right now, if nothing else changes, Arkansas's got four FBS games on its schedule in 2025. I don't know that Arkansas was the one that wanted to change this. Again, it looks like Missouri State might have been the source of needing to get this changed around. But it was going to be the first year in a long, long time, other than 20, where you had the COVID shutdown that changed everything. But it was going to be the first time in a long time that Arkansas didn't play an FCS team. Now they're going to get an FCS team on the schedule again next year. It's going to be Alabama A&M. That game will be in Fayetteville, August 30th, 2025. Other non-conference games that year for Arkansas, Arkansas State in Little Rock. I know a lot of people are looking forward to that one. More in Jonesboro probably than here. Notre Dame here in Fayetteville. And then Arkansas is scheduled to play at Memphis next year. That's a very interesting non-conference schedule. I mean, you got a lot going on there.
And all of those happen before October. So it's,
I think
it's going to be a really interesting first month or so of the year.
Notre Dame is the 27th of September, I think.
Yep.
And so, so you've got four non-conference games within the first 5 weeks of the season. And next year works out, too, like this year, where you've got two open dates, two bye weeks during the season. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how they put all this together. I guess there's a chance Arkansas doesn't play an SEC game until October next year, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they figure out a way to squeeze an SEC game in September.
Yeah, I think they'll probably – they're right now looking at the schedule. There's a week in between the Arkansas State and Memphis games next year, so I bet there's an SEC game squeezed in between those, like September the – quick math, 13th.
that would not surprise. So Arkansas and Alabama A&M in 2025. No need to drone on that for too long. College football begins this week. This is week zero. It's not a great list of games, but you got Florida State and Georgia Tech playing in Dublin. You know, Dublin's kind of become this place for teams to go over and open the season. I remember Nebraska and Northwestern did this a couple, 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. You got Montana State at New Mexico, SMU at Nevada, Delaware State is at Hawaii. I would not be surprised. I don't know when, but at some point, especially with the playoff being expanded, to see week zero become a more popular time for teams to play. Because if you play in week zero, and I'm not sure exactly how all this works, I think you may have to get some sort of – you maybe have to be granted some sort of exception to play in that week. But if you play in that week, you get yourself another bye week during the season. Mm-hmm. And I think it's typically the next week. I think if you play week zero, maybe you can't play the next week, or you have to take – I'm not exactly sure how that works. But either way, you get an extra week off for your players. And as – you know, I mean, maybe the SEC goes to a 9-game schedule. The Big Ten's already there. Other conferences are already there. It would add another bye week for the players, which I think people would love. And it's another week where college football does not have to compete with the NFL for TV eyes. And I think that could be something that's maybe more appealing as we go down the road.
Yeah, I agree. I always love these week zero matchups are usually not good at all. Like the fact that I'm over here just salivating for Georgia Tech and Florida State, for lack of a better term. I mean, people are ready for football by week zero, and if you can get some really good games, like maybe, I mean, I'm already watching the Sicko one, so I will definitely watch a really like a marquee game you can get on TV.
There was a point, this has been many years ago, there was a season opening game between Oregon State and Colorado State, and I wanted to watch it. And again, it's just because, hey, that was like the best game that weekend. I remember actually went and bought like a new streaming device because you had to have, it was one of those deals. It was when Hulu with live TV was only available with, I think it was with a Fire Stick with Amazon. You couldn't get it on Roku. So we had a Roku in our house. And so I actually went out and bought a Fire Stick so that I could do a free week of Hulu with live TV and watch this game between Colorado State and Oregon State.
I watched, Vandy played at Hawaii a few years ago, and that game started at like 10 p.m. Central, maybe later.
Oh, yeah, I remember
that. And I stayed up for that one. I mean, the fact that week zero can make I consider myself a pretty – I'm a football watcher, but like I'm not as sicko as some people, but even I'm by week zero just ready. I'll watch anything. So you give me, I don't know, give me Ohio State versus Alabama. That'll never happen. Week zero. Never happen, but give me a great game like that, and I will buy whatever streaming devices.
There's intrigue, I think, in Florida State, Georgia Tech, just because it's early in the season. Florida State, they look like they got a really good football team. There's a lot of people who think they may be the best team this year outside of the Big Ten and the SEC. And so there's some interest there. I think there's some interest that College Game Day is going to go over there and have a show Saturday morning. It's going to be the first time that Nick Saban is going to be part of the Saturday Game Day set. That's something that I think is interesting to look forward to this weekend. But more than anything, it's just games that matter. You know, I mean, it's games that actually count toward the record. I tried watching some preseason NFL the other night. I watched every Cowboys game for years. I was watching them play the Raiders. Number one, I forgot it was on until the second quarter. It didn't kick off till 9 o'clock. And then by about midway through the second quarter, I was dozing off. I did wake up in time to see Brandon Aubrey hit a 66-yard field goal.
Oh, wow. I did not see that.
Yeah. It would have been good from 70, by the way.
Getting off a tangent. He wasn't always a kicker, was he?
No, he played soccer at Notre Dame.
Wow.
I don't know that he played high school football. He may have.
Well, I asked because there's also Jake Bates who played at Arkansas.
That's a great comparison between those two.
He just hit a game winner. His was a game winner the other day as well, I believe, for the Detroit Lions.
Did he?
Yeah, I missed that. In the preseason. So
I know he had a bad practice recently, but what's interesting is that there were people that were talking about Jake Bates as a potential MVP in the UFL this year, about midway through the season, and I wrote on that, but he was playing for the Michigan Panthers, so he was playing in or at Ford Field, which is where he's going to be kicking for the Lions. There's got to be some, I don't know, I feel like there's got to be some carryover.
Yeah, well, I just looked it up to make sure I wasn't wrong. He hit a game-winning 43-yarder in Arrowhead, completed a comeback in the preseason, and I just think it's wild that Arkansas just 2 years ago, I mean, Jake Bates, the play I think we all remember is the onside kick that he got against Alabama.
Against Alabama, yep.
But Arkansas had two NFL kickers on its team. Cam Little is the Jaguars starter. They have cut everybody else. They're rolling with Cam. And then Jake Bates it seems like he's going to give the starting job in Detroit at least a run for its money. So.
And Jake Bates never kicked a field goal in high school either. Yeah. That's one of the great, kind of little nuggets of his story. Is, a lot of people because he never kicked a field goal in college. He played at Texas State, and then he came to Arkansas. And so in the UFL, I think he kicked like a 60-yarder to win week one in the UFL. And people were saying, oh, that's the first field goal he'd made since high school. No, it wasn't. He'd never made a field goal in high school. He told me that later. He said, it's a little bit of a misconception that I played high school football. I was on the high school football team, but I had a kicker who was better than me on the high school team. So pretty amazing story.
I think it's remarkable that these former soccer players can come out and they're hitting 60-plus yard. It's like the fact that it just takes, I guess, some transferring that skill set into how to kick from from somebody holding it. It's just remarkable to me. The fact that anybody can kick a ball 66 yards.
and the one that Aubrey kicked the other night, it would have been good from 70.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Wild.
It was indoors in Las Vegas, but it was that and Mahomes around the back pass from the weekend. Those were the two plays from the NFL weekend. Where I'm going with this, though, NFL preseason otherwise is pretty boring.
unless you're into former soccer.
We're making it
sound players.
A lot better than it really is.
Oh. We said the NFL preseason's a snoozer, and then we talked to
Yeah, we filled some time. A couple other notes that have come out today. Arkansas and Troy, they have scheduled a basketball game for November the 13th. We're getting to the point that we almost know all of Arkansas's basketball schedule now. We know that we mentioned last week UALR has been that contract has been signed. We know that Maryland Eastern Shore is going to be part of that multi-team agreement with UALR in Illinois. There was a – it's kind of interesting – It's amazing to me the number of people who just miss stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas-Illinois basketball was announced when? I mean, reported 2 months ago, 3 months ago almost?
Well, the Illinois AD said in front
That's
of
it. Yeah.
In front of reporters, there was a round table, and he announced it.
And then CBS puts out an announcement the other day, and people, oh, have you seen this game?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's been out there for 2 weeks. I also thought it was kind of funny. CBS put out a picture of John Calipari wearing his Naismith coat and a blue tie. Well, the Naismith coats, they're orange. John Calipari looks like the head coach of Illinois in this release that's talking about Arkansas playing Illinois. I just thought that was kind of humorous. Yeah. But Arkansas Troy are going to play November 13th at Bud Walton Arena. We're also going to find out this week the SEC basketball schedule is expected to be released on Tuesday. That's according to John Rothstein at CBS Sports. So what this means is that now we'll know when John Calipari goes back to Lexington. We'll know when Texas comes to Bud Walton Arena. This is going to be pretty interesting. The Calipari element and the OU and Texas to the SEC element, I think, make this an interesting schedule release.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those conference or just general basketball schedules. It's like buckle up for. You're playing in Madison Square Garden against Michigan. You're playing Illinois and Kansas City. You play at Miami. I mean, they're going all over the place, and they're going to have some really, really intriguing conference games, like you said. It's just, this is going to be one of those seasons that you just buckle up for and you kind of go along for the ride.
Yeah, it could be a lot of fun. One more note from this week, SEC is expected to extend its contract with the city of Hoover, Alabama, to keep the SEC baseball tournament in Hoover through at least the 2028 season. Not really a surprise. Greg Sankey has been on record in the past as saying that he wants a city to be kind of the go-to city. You know, like everybody's working their way to Nashville at the end of the year for basketball, or in women's basketball they play in, is it Greenville South Carolina. You know, football's in Atlanta, baseball is obviously in Hoover. So from that standpoint, it's not really surprising. Ethan, I've always thought, though, it'd be a lot of fun if the SEC would partner with some of these minor league ballparks that are within the SEC footprint, and, you know, that have a capacity that's comparable to the Hoover Met. And let's say you take the SEC baseball tournament on the road every year, kind of like what they're doing with SEC football media days. Mm-hmm. You know, they've had media days in Hoover a lot, but they've also gone to Atlanta. They've also gone to Dallas. Wouldn't surprise to see them go other places. They used to do this with the SEC basketball tournament before they got, you know, in bed with Nashville for the foreseeable future. But, you know, let's take the SEC baseball tournament to Frisco, Texas.
Yeah.
Let's take it to Oklahoma City in the Bricktown Ballpark. Take it to New Orleans. Take it to Louisville. Wouldn't that be cool? You take it to the home of the Louisville Bats. Take it to Memphis. Take it to, you know, the AutoZone Park there. Take it over to Nashville. They've got a great park.
Take it to Springdale.
No. But for one, the park's not big enough. I did go there, by the way, the other day to watch Justin Verlander pitch. But, you know, I mean, take it to these ballparks that have got capacities of 10,000 or more that are in these cities that are obviously capable. They've got the hotel, you know, space to accommodate, mm-hmm. you know, this large event. And just move it around. Because what happens is, you see this with, you know, Kentucky, they're going to travel anywhere. But especially in Nashville, they take over that town for men's mm-hmm. basketball. If you play, and Arkansas has done this before, if you play Georgia in the SEC football championship game, good luck making that a neutral site game.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. Same thing with Florida. They played Florida there a couple of times, and it was basically a road game.
If you play South Carolina women's basketball, it is a home game for them.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's move this thing around to where it's more accessible. And especially, you know, with the tournament format being what it is, it's going to be a single elimination format now in baseball. I don't know. It just feels like it would open it up to, mm-hmm. hey, if it's in Oklahoma City, OU, you're going to have a home game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get it out of Hoover where it's Alabama and LSU and everybody else.
Yeah, I come from this from I cover softball a lot standpoint, that they do the SEC tournament, they rotate the different campuses. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's a good model for them right now, just with, it brings a lot of excitement to that program that gets to host it that year. And it's usually recently been getting great crowds at all of them. I think it's just cool to keep it rotating and give each kind of area their opportunity to,
it just keeps it fresh.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, there's so many cool minor league ballparks too. Like, I was in Tulsa not too long ago in the Drillers ballpark. That would mm-hmm. be an awesome place to have.
It goes back to capacity there. I mean, somebody mentioned the ballpark in Charleston, South Carolina. Well, they've only got a 6,000 seat capacity. I don't think they're going to want to play it somewhere that's less than 9 or 10,000 seats, but there are plenty of those types of ballparks around the South. And especially now that the SEC has moved into Oklahoma, you've got Oklahoma City a really cool minor league ballpark over there that's part of that. Well, we appreciate you joining us today. Hope you will come to wholehogsports.com for all of our latest Razorback news. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Hope to see you then. Bye-bye.